Hello again. This is Larry Bonchek, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Scott Deron, a cardiologist at Lancaster General Hospital, associated with the Heart Group, and a gentleman I've had the pleasure of knowing and working together with for many years. He's also particularly interesting because in 2003, he published a book on C-reactive protein entitled CRP, Everything You Wanted to Know About CRP, Why It's More Important to Your Health Than Cholesterol. And today, I'm going to speak with Scott about the Jupiter trial that was presented in the fall of 2008 at the American Heart Association meeting. Welcome, first of all, Scott.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
The Jupiter trial was a trial of rosuvastatin, Crestor, to prevent vascular events in men and women with elevated C-reactive protein. This was a remarkable trial of primary prevention, and we're going to discuss today the trial, its implications for care of patients who are asymptomatic and have no other known risk factors for coronary and vascular disease. So, Scott, I'm going to first ask you to tell us what the Jupiter trial was about, how it was designed, in other words, and what lessons we can learn from it.
Thank you. The Jupiter trial's genesis was the observation that in approximately half of all patients who have heart attack and stroke, their levels of LDL cholesterol are below that are currently indicated by the NCEP guidelines for treatment.
It's also, now let's just pause for a moment to say that the NCEP guidelines are the National Cholesterol Education Program Adult Treatment Guidelines, and those were published in Circulation in 2004.
Correct.
So they're a few years old.
Yes, and the latest iteration is probably a year or so out, but may have substantial updates based on the Jupiter trial in particular in terms of perhaps including C-reactive protein measurements as well. So the observation has been that when you use a statin, not only does it lower LDL, it also lowers levels of C-reactive protein. The genesis of this was the hypothesis that if you lower C-reactive protein levels in apparently healthy individuals, you may well also lower their clinical event rates. So this is a large primary prevention trial, and one of the beneficial aspects of this study is its size. They looked at 17,802 apparently healthy individuals that had an LDL cholesterol less than 130 milligrams per deciliter, and also had a high sensitivity CRP measurement greater than or equal to 2 milligrams per liter.
Let me interrupt here and amplify how normal these LDLs were, because the average LDL in this trial was 108.
That's correct, and that's actually a little lower than certainly most of the people that walk in my office. Most of those people have LDLs off the street of 140, 150.
Yeah.
So this is a little surprising.
So this was almost 18,000 patients worldwide. I understand about 6,000 of the patients, though, were from the United States.
That's
and Canada.
Correct. Right.
And the next largest country was South Africa. And I'll also just interpose here that there were 7,000 women.
Correct. It's a very diverse group.
There were 5,000 blacks and Hispanics. So this study was really designed to be sure that they were covering the really broad cross-spectrum of patients that we're likely to see, unlike so many randomized trials.
Correct. So these patients were randomized to rosuvastatin 20 milligrams or placebo.
That's a pretty hefty dose of rosuvastatin.
It is. The maximum dose is 40. A commonly used starting dose is 5 or 10 milligrams. And they chose that dose because they clearly wanted to impact the LDL and CRP, which they did. These patients were followed for the development of a combined primary endpoint of myocardial infarction, stroke, arterial revascularization, hospitalization for unstable angina, and cardiovascular death. Secondary endpoints were the components of the primary endpoint considered individually, as well as all-cause mortality. So in each group, there were 8,901 patients, and there was a reduction in the LDL, as you would expect, in the rosuvastatin group from 108 down to 55. The placebo group changed slightly from 108 to 110. The hsCRP fell from 4.2 in the rosuvastatin group down to 1.8 at 48-month follow-up. And the CRP level actually did drop in the placebo group from 4.3 to 3.5 milligrams per deciliter.
It's important to point out, I think, that within this study group, there were 6,500 patients who had none of the other risk factors. 6,500 patients who were neither diabetic nor hypertensive nor smokers, didn't have a low HDL or a high LDL. So these are people who would be considered by all of our current criteria to have no risk factors whatsoever other than a CRP of greater than 2 milligrams per liter.
That's correct. And Paul Ritker's work from the 5-7 years ago, from the Nurses' Health Study in particular, did show that for women that were otherwise in a very low risk category, if their CRP in the case of that data was greater than or equal to 3 milligrams per liter, they had an approximate 3 to 4-fold relative increase of hard cardiovascular events in 10-year follow-up. So that data has been known from the Nurses' Health Study. The critique back then was it was an isolated population, and does this apply to the broad spectrum of diversity in the patients that we commonly see?
Yeah, so this study basically was a study that tried to answer the question, is CRP the chicken or the egg? Is CRP the result of the atherosclerotic process, or can it be a cause of the atherosclerotic process?
And that's a fundamentally important question, and there's actually conflicting data about that. Willa Hirsch's lab in University of California at San Diego has shown that CRP is able to turn on the gene for apoptosis and result in pre-programmed cellular death. And that is fairly compelling, suggesting that inflammation is part of the aging process itself. In fact, Carlo Franchetti from the University of Milan has the largest study of centenarians on Earth, and he has coined the term inflammaging. It's his contention that inflammation is the basis for the aging process and accounts for the patients that we've all seen. Some 80-year-olds act like 50-year-olds and vice versa. And it's his feeling that aging is really controlled by this smoldering low-grade inflammation, and it tends to fit that CRP, being a marker of inflammation, has been shown to carry a less than favorable prognosis when it's elevated. CRP was first identified on a pneumococcus type C, hence its name, C-reactive protein. And indeed, it's a critical part of the immune process. And when it's genetically engineered out of the organism, as has been done on Sprague-Dawley rats, When it's not there with the first infectious challenge, that organism dies. So it's a critical component to the immune response. And that also sort of dovetails nicely with the observations that when you immunize people against influenza, there is a resultant decrease in cardiovascular death. Because if you don't get influenza, you don't spike your CRP levels, and you avoid the problems that have been associated with a spike in CRP levels. There is good data out there that when you spike your CRP levels, it can accelerate angina, it can be operative in the genesis of plaque fracture, and all the things that we know of acute coronary syndrome.
So we've already had multiple studies, principally epidemiologic, but also experimental studies, to suggest that CRP is not only a passive reflection of an inflammatory process, but is an active component of the inflammatory process. What we've never known before, though, is can bringing down CRP by pharmacologic maneuver, by giving a statin, can that change the incidence of cardiovascular events?
That's correct.
And that's what this study was designed to show. So what did it find?
The follow-up was intended to be 48 months. But in this instance, the trial was stopped at 1.9 years of follow-up due to a remarkable reduction in the primary endpoint. In the study group, there were 142 events compared to 251 events in the placebo group, with a absolute risk reduction from 8% down to 4%, or a relative risk reduction of about 50%. And on the basis of...
Let's repeat that, because the absolute and relative risk reduction is a little bit hard to grasp on an audio recording when you're not looking at it. In other words, the absolute risk in the placebo group for a primary event was about 8%. And in the rosuvastatin group, it was about 4%, or half as much.
Correct.
So that the relative risk reduction was about 50%.
Correct.
Now, I know that these studies often use a concept of the number needed to treat in order to achieve a benefit. So let's talk about that aspect of this study. And I'll just define the term as being the number of patients that you would have to treat for 5 years in order to prevent a single event. And I know that in the primary prevention trials, it's usually in the range of 50 or 60. In other words, you'd have to treat 50 or 60 patients in order to prevent one heart attack, death, stroke, and all those components. So what was it in the Jupiter trial?
In the Jupiter trial, one only needed to treat 25 patients for 5 years to prevent one event.
That's half the number needed to treat for the conventional lipid-lowering use of a statin.
Correct. This was also seen in virtually every category that was looked at in terms of the secondary endpoint. Non-smokers benefited, thin people benefited, patients that had Framingham risk scores less than 10% benefited. In this group, in both the treatment arm and the placebo arm, about 40% of these individuals had metabolic syndrome. So it's been argued that this, by and large, is not a low risk, because we know that metabolic syndrome is not a low risk category. But even with the metabolic syndrome and the non-metabolic syndrome patients, benefit was seen in the secondary endpoint as well.
And that also brings us back to my mentioning earlier that there were 6,500 patients who had no other risk factors, non-smokers, no hypertension, no diabetes. And even in that group, there was a similar reduction in endpoints.
Correct.
So it sounds as if lowering CRP as primary prevention is something that ought to be done, and that patients who come to you to have their lipids checked should have their CRP checked. So I'm going to ask you now, how does this affect the way you manage your patients, and how should this affect the way family doctors manage their patients?
Prior to the Jupiter trial, we know that the low-risk patients have not benefited by CRP reduction with a statin. This would suggest that there is indeed benefit associated with that. And I'd like to amplify that, how it actually applies to clinical practice, in a moment. And we know what to do with a high-risk patient, somebody that has all the traditional risk factors, or who is a diabetic or has already had a coronary event. Their risk is very high, and those patients need to be treated aggressively on all fronts of cardiovascular risk. And that's one of the things that we are doing at our primary prevention clinic at the Heart Group. We have lipid apheresis for those patients that are unable to tolerate statins.
What does that consist of in terms of the practical application? What does the patient have to do? How often do they come?
They come every 2 weeks, and typically we'll have an LDL cholesterol of 300, and we'll leave with an LDL cholesterol of about 50.
How long does that
it's
take?
It's a two-hour treatment where they have a cannula placed in a cubital vein on both sides, and similar to dialysis, their plasma is cycled through a column which binds the cholesterol, removes it, returns the plasma otherwise unchanged to the patient. That's commonly used for our patients that have familial hyperlipidemia, of which we now have, I believe, 12 in our clinic. We're making a huge difference. We have seen patients change from a situation where they're being hospitalized several times a year with yet a coronary event after coronary event. One young individual in particular, as soon as he started lipid apheresis, his coronary events have stopped. He has not been hospitalized since he has started lipid apheresis. For those super high-risk patients, that's an option. But in our preventative cardiology clinic over at the office, we see a lot of people which are in that intermediate risk category.
Now, what do you mean by intermediate risk?
People that have a Framingham risk score somewhere between 10 and 20%, meaning that in 10-year follow-up, their chance of a cardiovascular risk as calculated from Framingham is between 10 and 20%. The new iteration of the NCEP guidelines probably will reflect including a CRP measurement at the outset for everybody who gets a lipid panel. I believe there's ample data out there to suggest that that's an important thing to do.
Are you not suggesting that anyone now should have their CRP checked with their lipids?
It's my practice, if they're not high risk, I measure it on everybody, because I can better interpret that lipid panel with a CRP in hand. For every level of LDL cholesterol, especially with the Jupiter data, measuring CRP helps fine-tune risk. It tells us whether the fuse is lit.
All right. If you have a patient who is 45 years old, LDL is 95, HDL is 45, and the patient's grandfather died of a heart attack at the age of 50. His father is 65 and has had one mild heart attack. So this patient has a family history, his lipids are acceptable, and his CRP is 3.
I would want to know probably two or three other things about this individual. Their waist circumference, which is actually a very good predictor of future cardiovascular events, whether the patient has microalbuminuria, and whether they're hypertensive.
Okay, not hypertensive, no microalbuminuria, and their weight is 34. In other words, I've constructed for you a patient with a family history, so he's got a risk factor, no other obvious clinical risk factors, but his CRP is elevated, and according to the Jupiter trial, he would experience a 50% or 45% reduction in relative risk over just a 2-year period.
Correct. That's the individual that I would write a prescription for 70,000 steps a week and give him a pedometer. I think these patients, before they get placed on a drug, which certainly has cost, which is certainly substantial for Crestor, I believe it's $3.45 a day, for essentially lifelong therapy, and if he's at the age of 45, we still don't have long-term data about the influence of statins. It's certainly a very widely studied drug, and to date there have not been any alarming indications, although in Jupiter there was the demonstration that there was a slightly higher glycohemoglobin in the patients that were treated with rosuvastatin that did reach statistical significance with a p-value equal to 0.001. So there are some questions about long-term statin use that brings me back to the cornerstone that I believe that we as physicians need to address with our patients, and that is the importance of taking care of oneself. And it's my bias in this country that we don't have a healthcare crisis so much as a self-care crisis. And I look at self-care as the underutilized tool for our patients. And I show them the Jupiter trial, and many patients have come into the office talking about the Jupiter trial. But when I put into context the relative risk reduction that one sees by taking this drug, which clearly has some expense and some potential side effects, I talked to them about 4 studies. One is the Nurses' Health study, where with one group they showed a relative risk reduction of 31% in cardiac events if you simply eat fish once a week. The Oslo trial actually showed that with intense dietary intervention and smoking counseling, coronary events dropped by 47%. And in another limb of the Nurses' Health study, where not only dietary counseling, but exercise, body weight control, Smoking cessation was done fairly intensively. Coronary events fell off 83%. And a mortality benefit was shown in the Finnish twin cohort study. A mortality benefit of 34% was seen with occasional exercise, and a mortality benefit of 56% with regular exercise. So in the patient you suggested, I will sit down with them, go over therapeutic lifestyle changes with them, issue them the pedometer, a literal prescription for 70,000 steps a week, ask them to come back in 3 months and then again in 6 months, bringing their pedometer log with them, measuring their weight and reassessing their numbers after 6 months of therapeutic lifestyle changes to see if their CRP drops. And it's well known that CRP will drop with dietary intervention of the Mediterranean diet and also with exercise and weight loss.
Okay, but if their CRP doesn't drop, and it may not drop, A, because they're lying to you about their lifestyle changes, or because they're unable to make those changes and they fess up. One way or the other, you have given them an opportunity to lower their CRP with non-pharmacologic means, and they have failed to do so for whatever reason. Would you put that person on a statin?
I would. If they're comfortable with a statin, they need to understand the aspects of going on essentially a drug for the rest of their life. And with careful monitoring, I think everyone's experience with statins are that they're very well tolerated. We always see the patient that has the associated myalgias and so forth, and we encounter a lot of patients that are dubbed statin resistant, but it turns out with certain approaches using very low dose, even just twice a week, and supplementation with ubiquinone, which is an over-the-counter nutraceutical, one can often get many of these patients that have been felt to be statin-resistant on a statin.
Statin-resistant or statin-intolerant?
Statin-intolerant is a better term.
Well, to sum up, it strikes me from everything we've said here that the Jupiter trial has the potential to be a real game-changing trial in our approach to people with elevated CRP and in our approach to the concept of what an elevated CRP means. I mean, it strikes me that the Jupiter trial comes down very heavily on the side of elevated CRP being a cause, not just a passive reflection of an atherosclerotic process.
I would agree with you. I think it is something that adds to our knowledge base about CRP. The power of this trial is very large numbers, a well-done trial. It is a trial of statin therapy. A trial that really addresses the utility of CRP would have a limb where CRP was not measured, and we saw the clinical outcomes associated with that. I'm not sure that trial will ever be done because of funding issues and so forth, but it does add extensively to our clinical knowledge base about the power of statins and the utility of CRP.
Thank you very much, Scott.
My pleasure.